This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host, and I'm glad to have you with us today. You know, we all understand, don't we, that forgiveness is at the heart of our Christian faith. We talk about it all the time. We started in the forgiveness of sins, and yet many people struggle over it. And what becomes perhaps a great privilege and experience that we can have becomes little more than a formula and a duty and an obligation, something that we know we're supposed to do, but it's difficult and we don't really understand it. Well, I want to talk about that today, and I want to talk about it with Dr. Miroslav Volf, the author of a book free of charge, Giving and Forgiving in a Culture Stripped of Grace. So listen carefully. I think he's going to take us deeper into the subject of forgiveness because he's going to take us deeper into the heart of God, and that's what we need to hear today. Dr. Volf, glad to have you on Peace Talk.
It's great to be with you, Larry.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you're a professor of theology at Yale Divinity School, but give us a little bit about your background and then just go right into why did you write a book on forgiveness?
Well, I was born in former Yugoslavia. I'm a son of a Pentecostal minister, and after I have found my way back to faith at the age of about 16, you know, my life has been all about trying to figure out how to reflect on, how to pass on a kind of a great vision of Christian life to those around me. So that's basically what I do. That's what brought me first to Fuller Theological Seminary, where I taught for a number of years, and then to Yale. And that's actually what has motivated me as I was writing this book free of charge, because I think at the very heart of the gospel is this message that the gifts of God, the gift of life, the gift of creation, but the gift of also salvation and the forgiveness are free of charge.
So you talk about, and maybe we should start here, you say in the little byline on the book that this is a culture stripped of grace. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think we live increasingly in a culture where kind of everything is for sale, where money buys you this, money buys you that, and the sphere in which we trade with one another, and occasionally steal a thing here or there, but primarily where we trade with one another, has expanded very broadly. But I think the Christian faith is at the heart about gift-giving. This is who God is. God is a gift-giving God. This is who God is. God is a for-giving God. And this is a little bit of alternative message in a culture where everything is traded back and forth.
Well, as you mentioned in your own history, even though you would be considered a theologian, you think what is in the book free of charge and what you want to do is immensely practical, isn't it?
Yes, and I do believe that theology is very practical science, except when it's not practical. I think it's about theology, at least for me. It's about explicating, making plausible for today a way of life, a Christian way of life. And I think it's something that touches our everyday life. It touches the way we raise our kids. It touches the way we work. It touches the way we eat, what we cook. It touches all of our lives. And I think that's a very exciting part about being a theologian, which is really just a little bit more time given to reflection than ordinary Christians do in their ordinary life. I do what we all, in a sense, do.
When you say that God is a giving God, go ahead and expand that for us, if you would, because I take it that's the heart of your book, is understanding God as a giving God.
Well, you know, in the Bible, in the first epistle of John, it says that God is love. For God to be love means that God is unconditional love, which is to say that God is unconditional generosity. How did the world come to be? Because there was a generous God who decided not to be alone, but to have objects of love, and therefore out of love, and to find the resting place for love outside of himself, has created the world. When the world has gone astray, what did God do? He said, well, I'm going to find the way back for these people who have abandoned me, and I'm going to find the way back by sheer gift of my grace. I will embrace them, notwithstanding their waywardness. And I think that all, both the creation and salvation, they're gifts of God, and they're expression of the fact that at the very, very heart of our faith is the conviction that in God's very being, and not just in God's action, God is love.
When God forgives us, and then just draw the line, when we forgive one another, what is it that's really happening when God forgives us and we forgive somebody? What are the ideas, the true ideas that underlie that process or that happening?
Well, you know, some people think, and increasingly in the culture, so if you listen to Dr. Phil or folks like this, forgiveness has to do with, in their mind, with somehow managing our inner rage after we have been injured. We're angry, and somehow we need to figure out how to calm our emotions and then to go past beyond the hurt. I think this is a little bit different in the Christian faith. Forgiveness isn't simply about my emotions. Forgiveness is about restoring the relationship that has been disrupted by injury that has occurred. So that means first that when I forgive, I name a wrong that has been committed against me as a wrong. Second, I don't let that wrong count against you. That's the forgiveness part proper, right? First part is presupposition of forgiveness. I indicate what you've done against me is a wrong, but I've also at the same time said, I won't count it against you. I'm giving you a free gift of not counting your transgression against me. And that's what God does with us. That's what Christ did for us on the cross. That's what we receive when we receive forgiveness from God.
So in your teaching here, and as you believe the Bible teaches on forgiveness, that we're not simply rolling over, are we, and accepting something. We're actually identifying it very carefully, exactly what it is, calling it what it is, and then dealing with it.
I think that's exactly right. So some people think that forgiveness and justice are the opposites. And so you either simply, you know, say shrug it off and says, hey, it doesn't concern me. I don't worry about it. It's okay. Or you don't deal with it, but you inside internally you simply say, you know, I'm just not going to let that capture my imagination. I'm not going to let it stall me in my progression in life. I don't want to be captive of that other person's injury to me, so I'm just going to go ahead. And both of these are ways of not attending to what is at the heart of the injury, namely somebody has done a wrong. And that wrong, I think, needs to be named. And the beauty of forgiveness is that it names the wrong, but it lets go of it, that it lets the one who has done the wrong doing off the hook, so to speak. It doesn't kind of count that wrongdoing against that person.
In a real sense, then, the person who forgives actually takes on the penalty of the wrong in many cases, don't they?
In some ways it is what it amounts to, right? Because I have not only been wronged, but on top of it, I choose not to retaliate. I choose not to press charges. It's almost like somebody has slapped me, and I just simply let that slap stay on me. I kind of stop the back and forth that might start going on if I were to retaliate. And in that sense, it is truly a gift that I give. It's a gift that I give to another person, but it's also a gift that I give to myself, and it's also a gift that I give to the world around me.
You mentioned in one point of your book that the greatest gift that we can give to people sometimes is not an item, but it's the act of our own generosity. Explain that in more detail, if you would.
Yeah, you know, so you can sometimes imagine somebody is giving you, somebody sends you, gives you a gift, and I mean, it's fine, but you know that their heart is not in it. You know that they've either have an extra pair or something, and they just tossed it off to you. You are been benefiting by it, but somehow the gift itself is deficient because it doesn't come from attention, from willingness to share of oneself with another person. I think that gifts, if they're good gifts, if they're well-given gifts, and, you know, it's an art to give well. And giving, just like forgiving, can go wrong in many ways. And sometimes we are so proud of our giving that we spoil all the gifts that we give. We're so proud of ourselves that we are forgiving that we make it difficult for another person to accept our forgiveness. But when things are done well, when we give well, we don't give just a piece of something to somebody else. In some ways, the gift itself, the object, is a symbol of a greater gift. And that greater gift is a gift of part of myself to another person. And that's the beauty of the giving. I give myself to another person. And that means that I'm giving, so to speak, I'm giving generosity. And then what I'm expecting, also hoping in return, is that the heart of another person will be directed toward me. I will receive their generosity. And so once the generosity starts circulating, then we've got heaven on earth.
Dr. Wolf, when you turn on a television set and you hear oftentimes the preacher on the television and he's talking about giving, what bothers you about what you might hear on the television?
Well, what bothers me is that when I hear preachers, and at least those that I hear, they want you to give to them. They are extorting, right, in the guise of you sowing a seed or something of that sort. I understand that preachers, ministers have to live sometimes from the gifts, from generosity of those to whom they serve. But when that becomes a kind of dominant mode and somehow persuading others to give, it gets kind of, it subverts the whole idea of giving. One doesn't give then cheerfully, or one gives more like an investment rather than actually a gift. And it's sometimes you have a feeling that the gospel is being kind of sold and the people are being manipulated into something which sounds like gift giving is going on, but almost something exact opposite of that is happening.
Dr. Wolf, we're at the end of the first half of the program, and your story, your book tells a tremendous story of forgiveness that came out of your family. And I would like to pick up the second half of the program right there. And you tell the story of an act of forgiveness of your parents in a great tragedy that took place in their lives, and how all of that worked out and fit into your understanding of the idea of forgiveness. We'll pick up when we come right back. We'll be back in 2 minutes. So stay with us. Come on back. Join us in just a minute. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
On the next edition of the Mike Huckabee Show, Senator Marco Rubio will be with us. He's one of the Gang of Eight. They're the ones who put forth an immigration reform bill. But it has not been without some serious controversy. And the question remains, will we secure the borders first or create a pathway to citizenship and legality for the 11 million illegals who are here? We'll ask him about it. Also, Congressman Randy Forbes joins us. Just a couple of the reasons you need to be with us on the next Mike Huckabee Show.
Weekdays at noon on Christian Talk 660.
Home at last. Dear Lord, you know what a rough day I've had at work. Please help me to leave all my stress outside so I can focus on the precious people inside. Help me to give them my undivided attention without distractions of the workday. Amen.
Mommy's home!
Mommy!
Here's the beautiful family I've been missing all day.
For tips on spending quality time with your family, visit facebook.com/makeeverydaycount.
Before we rejoin today's program, let me say thank you for listening to Peace Talk. Each program comes with the prayer that you will find the peace that Jesus desires for you to enjoy today. But I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the website, peacetalk.com. Go to peacetalk.com and you'll discover that Peace Talk is more than teaching and great stories. We offer opportunities for bringing Peace Talk to you and your church. If you're caught in relationship-destroying conflict, at peacetalk.com you can access relationship-restoring services. You will also find seminar retreat opportunities for your group. And at peacetalk.com you can read the blog and sign up for our free email newsletter, Peace Mail. Follow us on Peace Talk and Twitter. And please, don't overlook the donate button, because Peace Talk needs your help. Peace Talk is all about you finding peace. Let's rejoin our program, and remember, Peace Talk is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host. If you're joining us for the first time on the program, glad to have you. If you stuck with us through the break, glad to have you back. We're talking about one of the most key and central ideas of all of Scripture, and that's the idea of forgiveness. And we're talking about it with Dr. Miroslav Volf, author of the book Free of Charge, Giving and Forgiving in a Culture Stripped of Grace. Dr. Volf, you tell the story in your book of a great act of forgiveness that you saw in the life of your own parents. Tell us about the story that was such a demonstration of forgiveness that no doubt changed your life.
Yes, thank you for inviting me to speak about it. I was 1 year old. My brother was five, and he was a young boy full of life who loved to play, and two blocks away from our house was a small military base, and he loved to go and play with so-called his soldiers. It was a time when soldiers had horses and horse-drawn carriages, and he would go there, spend time. My mother was working, and my nanny was taking care of us, nanny being a woman who was poor enough not to have a place to live, so he joined us and lived in our three-room house. And he snuck away from her and went to play with his soldiers, and one of them put him on the horse-drawn cart, and they were going under the doorpost. He was sitting a bit higher than the doorpost was, and his head got squeezed between the cart and the doorpost, and he died on the way to the doctor. And my parents was obviously it was a devastating experience for them. And independently, the two of them said to themselves, "The Word of God tells us to forgive as we have been forgiven in Christ." And so we decided to forgive. Forgive the soldier for what he had done, but also, in a beautiful, extraordinary way, forgive the nanny for her negligence in letting this little boy slip out of her care. And it remained with us. You know, obviously it's a family tragedy, but the story of that forgiveness remain as a kind of powerful reminder of what can happen and how lives can mend. This soldier, by the way, happened not to have been Christian, and my father has spent quite a bit of time and effort traveling for full day in order to see him at his home and talk to him about the love of God. So it became an occasion to proclaim the greatness of God's love and generosity and forgiveness to all of us.
You said in your book, we forgive because saving our enemies and making friends out of them matters more to us than punishing them. Seems like, as you just told the story, that's what your parents did, isn't it?
Yeah, that is what they did. And you know, I think the kind of motivation that they had is exactly what lies at the heart of the reason why Christians do that. Well, relate to one another as Christ has related to you. Do to one another what Christ has done to you. Christ has forgiven, and therefore you forgive. Why did Christ forgive? because it mattered to Christ more to bring us back to him and to ourselves than it mattered to him somehow to vent his anger and establish and show to us his justice and to punish us. That's why God took human sin upon himself rather than punishing it. That's why also we forgive rather than punish.
Would you say that forgiveness, as your parents demonstrated and as God demonstrated for us, is, in this culture, almost radical Christianity?
I do think it is. It's always hard. You know, when I talk to my mother, and I often did, about what she has experienced as mother and the forgiveness, she would always say, kind of quiet herself down and then say, you know, Miroslav, this was a very difficult forgiveness. It was a necessary forgiveness. It was a good forgiveness, but it is a difficult forgiveness. So no matter what culture we live, it's not easy to forgive, because our hearts, when we have been injured deeply, they cry for revenge, they cry for justice, and yet that cry can never properly be satisfied. We know that, and we know that from stories of those who have, quote-unquote, received justice, that their craving for this something hasn't been satisfied. But it's difficult, and at the same time, it's immensely beautiful. And I think at the point of giving, and especially at the point of forgiving to those who deserve exactly opposite, the gospel is the most countercultural.
Do you find then that perhaps why forgiveness is so difficult is because in many cases we really don't want to dig down into the depths of our own pain to really identify the hurt that we have? And it's sometimes easier just to paper that over and give a glib forgiveness?
Yeah, it may be, but all these glib forgiveness serves very little anyone, right? You easily give forgiveness, but as soon as you are back home, as the moment has quieted, the same rage that was there remains. And somebody who's received glib forgiveness, they either, if they are kind of arrogant, they'll just continue in the same fashion. You'll be confirming them in their own ways. Or if they are kind of sensitive consciences, they will know that that's not a real and genuine forgiveness. And so the kind of work of proper forgiveness that is attuned with what we are feeling and how we are experiencing it and how difficult it is and how what a wrong has been occurred, all of this, I think, goes into proper forgiveness. And when that happens, when the other person realizes what they have done and that they have been generously given a gift of generosity without a sense of superiority, without sense of kind of looking down upon that, when there's a genuine concern, it's an amazingly liberating thing for everyone.
Your mother, when you talked of her about this forgiveness, was this something that happened once, or that when she remembered these events, she would have to remind herself that those events were forgiven?
You know, often, I mean, we talk about this issue very often, and I think it was she who taught me that forgiveness isn't a kind of one-time finished event. There's a cycle of forgiveness. You kind of forgive, but then you want to take it back, and you take it back in your heart, and then you forgive. There is a struggle for forgiveness. There is a kind of practice of forgiveness that goes on. And I think for forgiveness to be successful, for it to work well, you need to stay with it. It needs to be a form, an attitude, and a way of life rather than just a simple, discrete act and then running off to the next thing.
Given the way all of us are put together, we're constantly being hurt and hurting others. And surely there are some listeners who right now are thinking about situations, circumstances, people that bring to mind anger and rage and a desire for revenge. What would you say to them today? How do they go about tapping into the givingness of God to genuinely forgive the person that has hurt them?
I think I'd probably say two things. One thing is to simply meditate on what Christ has done for us. Meditate on the cross. I think forgiveness happens the easiest, and it's best reached if we stand ourselves under the foot of the cross and we realize that we ourselves have been forgiven, and that we ourselves are in need of forgiveness as much as anyone else is in need of forgiveness. So that's the one thing. But the other thing, we sometimes think that when we forgive, that we lose. That somehow we have given up on something that if we were to have executed it, if we were to have punished, we would have been better off. And I think if we realize that forgiveness, of course, is a gift that we give to somebody else, but actually that when we forgive, we extend ourselves, but just by extending ourselves, we become truly beautiful as human beings, and we affirm ourselves more than we would by executing punishment against somebody. So both looking at who God is and what God has done toward us and realizing how forgiveness is actually the pinnacle of our beauty rather than a kind of a sacrifice that we have to suffer simply, I think these two things would help us move toward forgiveness.
And would you say, as we move down to the end of the program, that in fact God is most beautiful when we see His forgiveness towards a fallen creation?
Yeah, that's who the God we worship is, God revealed in Jesus Christ. You know, it's in some ways the most disturbing image that is at the very heart of our faith, the cross, and not just the cross, but the body that has been mutilated, that has been wronged, and yet it is the most beautiful thing because it is a symbol of self-giving love of God that has embraced the whole humanity. And we too, when we forgive, we are beautiful because we reflect this extraordinary beauty of God's love.
Dr. Vall, thank you for taking your time to be a part of Peace Talk today. It's a wonderful book. I recommend it to anybody. Again, the title is Free of Charge, Giving and Forgiving in a Culture Stripped of Grace. I challenge you to get a copy of the book, look at it, because it will cause you to go deep into God and deep into your faith, and it will, in fact, change your life when you tap into the givingness of God. There are people, perhaps, in our listening audience today who need that forgiveness of God, and I invite you. There's a God with open arms who stands ready to forgive because Jesus has died for us, and He would like to plant His life into your life today. So come to Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. Thank you for being a part of Peace Talk today, because as always, this is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.